It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. We check in now on a story that's gotten less and less coverage over the past few weeks, even as people continue to suffer. And that's the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian, which devastated much of the Bahamas last month. Erin Aylworth is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal, where she covers hurricanes, wildfires, and other disasters, and she just returned from the Abaco Islands in the Bahamas. And I spoke to her about what she saw nearly 1 month after Dorian's landfall.
It was pretty much complete devastation. Marsh Harbor, the main city on the large island that I was on, it was just buildings completely knocked down. There was one area, a shantytown known as the Mud, where the storm surge had just moved these large, cargo containers inland, and they were sitting among the rubble of what used to be homes. So it really, this is a place that used to house hundreds of people, and it looked like a junkyard with just splintered wood and belongings everywhere and just piles of it. So you really had to sort of scale it. And every direction that you turned, it was just destruction, destruction, destruction.
What do we know about the current death toll?
So the death toll as of a couple of days ago, according to the local police force out there, is 58. But there are still a lot of people missing. Originally, it was about 1,300 people missing. It's now a little bit, I think, a little under 900 have been found, so several hundred more still missing. And officials just have repeatedly said that they think that death toll is going to go significantly higher.
Now, usually with natural disasters, as you know, there's a lot of displacement. Were there folks who were displaced by the hurricane? And if so, where are they living now?
Absolutely. Some people evacuated before the storm. A lot of people evacuated after everything was knocked down. There are about 1,600 people still in shelters as of the last tally. And then just a lot of people also ended up going to stay with family and friends, either on other islands or, someplace like Florida. But I also just know a lot of people didn't leave ahead of the hurricane and initially thought, oh, it's not going to come our way. And then by the time they realized that they were going to take that direct hit, it was too late.
We also know that the Bahamas have a large Haitian population. What has the impact been on them so far?
So from what I saw, it really seemed like they were the most impacted. When I was on Abaco, almost everyone that I talked to was Haitian or Haitian Bahamian or of Haitian descent. And a lot of them hadn't left because they were afraid to go to a shelter. They were afraid, what might happen to them if they went to Nassau, if they had papers, but they had been washed away, for instance, would they be able to work that out or would they just be deported? Those were the fears. And so you had these pockets of people living in conditions that are terrible. We visited a couple of churches that had been hit by the storm. People had been able to take shelter in them, but, the windows had been blown out, the doors were gone, sanctuaries were flooded, and people were just trying to find any space that they could, a dry place to sleep, essentially. And aid was coming in from organizations, so they were getting food and water, but also just living in these, terrible sort of day-to-day existences. There was another shantytown community, the farm, in kind of a rural area, and they were literally salvaging the wreckage of their community and just tacking together any sort of shelter that they could on top of that rubble. That was just heartbreaking.
Erin Aylworth is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal covering hurricanes, wildfires, and other disasters. Erin, thanks so much for your reporting.
Always.
We're going to continue talking now about the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian in the Bahamas. About one-fifth of the island's total population are of Haitian descent. And following the destruction of Hurricane Dorian, tensions between the island's Haitian population and the Bahamian government are being exposed. I'm joined now by the Secretary of the Rights Bahamas Association, Paco Nunez. Paco, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having us.
And Ellie Pettifate is a Bahamian citizen of Haitian descent. Ellie, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Ellie, let's start with you. What is life like for Haitians who live in the Bahamas?
Well, life here over here isn't the greatest. I mean, there are a lot of challenges that presents itself on a daily basis, especially after the storm, because there are so much people that are displaced. I mean, homes are gone, jobs are gone. And now with the immigration stating that even if you had documentation and your employer has no more place to work, you have to go back home. So there's a sudden fear among the shelters. And I mean, I just came from a shelter yesterday. I've got friends of mine that are actually in this position, and they're actually afraid. I mean, some of them actually leaving the shelters at day and coming in at night just to prevent immigration from coming in to catch them.
When did you and your parents leave Haiti for the Bahamas?
Actually, my mother came to the Bahamas in the late 1960s, and I was born here in 1973. My mother was a maid, and her employers, you know, filed for documentation for her to work. An immigration officer told me that, being that I had a passport, I can apply for my mother to reside with me here in the Bahamas. And so I applied for her, and she received it. Every 6 months, she had to pay $600, and it went up to $1,000. And she had that for like 9 years. Now my mother is a Bahamian citizen.
Paco, in 2015, there was a new passport policy, different from the one that Ellie's describing, that the Bahamas implemented. And I'm wondering if you could tell us how that affected the Haitian community.
Sure. So beginning in 2014, the former administration, not the one that's in office now, but the former administration announced a policy, a crackdown, if you will, enhanced enforcement. This was quite obviously political. There is, you know, a lot of discrimination, casual discrimination among the population against people of Haitian descent. And so the former administration was trying to cash in on this. See, if you're born in the Bahamas, you're not automatically a citizen. If your parents are foreign, you have to wait until you're 18 to apply. And there used to be this document called a certificate of identity. It was, for all intents and purposes, a passport. It was a travel document, and it would prevent the immigration department from stopping you, detaining you, and so on. And they announced that they were going to abolish that and create what they called a belongers permit. You'd have to apply. It was very rigorous and onerous. You'd have to bring all sorts of documents, prove who your parents were and where they were born. And crucially, you'd have to have a passport. Now, if you're not a Bahamian until you're 18, the only passport you could feasibly get was a Haitian passport. These difficulties were, in our view, an effort to dissuade people from accessing their constitutional rights to eventually become a citizen.
And Paco, how has the passport policy come back into the spotlight, if you will, as the Bahamas is dealing in a post-Dorian world?
If you think about a place like Abaco Island, where Haitian communities were devastated, I mean, there's literally no buildings left. You have all of these people. Some of them are Haitian people on work permits who are legally here. Suddenly, the immigration department can claim the right to deport almost all of them, because you either fall into a category where you have a problem with your status, as many people who entered undocumented do, or you had a work permit, but the business no longer exists because the storm has destroyed it. They now are claiming the right to remove all of those people, whether they are documented or not.
Ellie, have you or your friends been affected by this passport policy since Hurricane Dorian?
Actually, yes. I'm from a family of 10. All of my brothers and sisters, except two sisters and a brother that fall in this category, they actually applied for this Haitian passport, and now they've got to get documentation to apply for citizenship. And it's just so much red tape, because the children, even the grown kids that are 18, they can't open a bank account. It's hard to get a job. And when they do apply for the passport, it takes up to 5+ years, sometimes 10 years. I mean, some of my younger brothers applied when they were 18 and they didn't get it till they were 28, 29. And it creates a frustration, because you can't even get a job. And now with this storm being passed and some of the people losing all their documents, and now you've got to go back, and it's hard to prove that, you know, hey, I had a passport, and the record system here is so, I mean, there's so much challenges. Everything is on paperwork. it happens to a lot of people, and I don't think it's fair. And with the Hurricane Dorian, I think that they're using this perfect storm as an opportunity to rid the Bahamas of people with documents that are not up to date, the Haitians that are here.
Paco, what percentage of the Haitian community lost their homes during Dorian? What is the status of people who are living in a post-Dorian world right now?
On the islands of Abaco, which had the largest two settlements of Haitian people in the Bahamas, there are no more houses. Those two settlements are totally destroyed. So it's 3,600 people that were there. They are all displaced. Some of them are obviously deceased, and those numbers still aren't in.
And Ellie, for people whose homes, or for people who were already living in poorer and marginalized conditions before the storm, what hope is there for these communities going forward? I mean, what are the most immediate needs right now?
Proper shelter, medical treatment. There really isn't any hope. The place was flattened. Everybody lost everything. And right now, if you don't have any status or anything, I mean, it's just sad. And I don't think the Bahamian government realizes how serious this is, being that, you know, it happened in their country. And I think they were caught with their pants down because there was no real hurricane prevention and there was no real hurricane post. Like the aftermath, it's just a matter of just collecting donations and collecting donations and letting them pile up or just distributing them among to just Bahamians of. There could be a little bit more compassion on the government side.
Now, Ellie, I'm wondering if you can give us a sense about, you know, whether this, oftentimes when we see this level of discrimination, it doesn't just start, you know, sort of after the storm or after a major incident. It usually has deep roots. And you mentioned some of those roots in previous passport policies. But I'm wondering, has this type of discrimination against the Haitian community existed, not just from a government standpoint, but also among Bahamians towards the Haitian immigration population?
Oh, definitely. This has been a long, long thing going. I mean, it's from like, I'm 46 and it's been happening since I was born. And it's just like a way of life. Like, being here in the Bahamas, I mean, if you're a Bahamian of Haitian descent, you go for a job. As soon as they see your name, there's an apprehension. Then you go around and you hear the Bahamians talking negatively about the Haitians because, first of all, because their living conditions and the boats trying to smuggle in. And sometimes some Haitians are involved in certain crimes. And so this just creates a bad image towards the Haitian community. And I can honestly say, Some of the stuff that goes on in the Bahamas, I think that the Haitians kind of, you know, they've created some of the problem also. But I don't think that means that you're supposed to be, you know, discriminated because of something that you've done. Growing up, it's been a challenge for all Haitians. Just knowing, especially when you raided. I mean, this happened to me one time and they seen me. And of course, they asked me, do I have a passport? I'm like, yeah, I got a passport, but I don't have it on me. So they were like, well, you need to go find it. But good thing I was near my mom's house. So I went and got it. And they were very rude. And then the way they go about doing it is very, very rude. And then they're aggressive. And then they approach you like you're a criminal.
Now, Paco, I'm wondering, as aid begins to trickle into the Bahamas, we're understanding that the Red Cross and other organizations are there on the ground. Is it being distributed equally or as it should be among Haitian populations as well as Bahamian populations?
It's honestly very difficult to say. The shelters as they exist now are not separated. Obviously, if you were in a certain area, you will be among the people who lived around you in the shelter. But there's no clear line between Haitians and Bahamians. So I would say that it probably is at this point, but that's not the real danger. The real danger is that now that they have these captive populations in shelters, they're planning to sift through them and separate people who are of Haitian descent with a view to deporting them. And if I could just respond to a few things that Ellie said on that. This is not an effort to remove people who have problems with their documentation. It is that. But that's only, according to the government's own statistics, 20% of the people in Abaco. A good 40% on top of that have work permits. So they're here legally. They haven't broken any law. The government has just announced that they are, those people themselves have to go home as well, as they put it. And then the question of the children, like Ellie, of people who are of Haitian descent, who have a right to be registered as citizens of the Bahamas on their 18th birthday, they too are going to be subject to removal, especially if they're minors, because if you remove someone's parents, you send the minors with them. So we're talking about a very, very large number of people that are not necessarily people who have problems with their documentation or have broken any law whatsoever.
Paco Nunez is the secretary of the Rights Bahamas Association, and Ellie Pettifate is a Bahamian citizen of Haitian descent. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.